cook things.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is the last lecture. Now the purpose, this is registered as a buffer lecture, and the idea here is I'm trying to prepare you for the final exam. This is a slide that talks about the purpose of the course, and again, the final exam is trying to figure out how independent you are in this area. It's a research course, and we're trying to figure out how to deal with giving you the general competence to analyze, apply, discuss, and contribute to innovation and innovation process. Administratively, the situation is this. Some of the individuals in Germany, they're active in a sense because they see them on Fronter, that they're looking at the material. I sent out email to everyone saying, do you want a Skype time? It's either that the material is very clear, or you don't have time, or you don't like Skype. But I'm available. If you want some other time, just send it on request. A lot of this information has to be processed. I sent out an email to everybody with the exam question, right? So I sent out an old exam. Sometimes that gets the students a bit panicky. And to give an example, here's a slide. And this is for the folder in Lab 2. So some of my other distance students are wondering if they could contribute. And I will put this in the Lab 2 folder. A student has done Lab 2 and has given an example of Lab 2. And that's what it's saying here. And I gave him feedback. It was well done. It's done well enough, I think, to use as an example. And he's given me permission to share that with you. This is a slide copy of it. I can give you more. He's basically looking at an incident, and you can see here, I won't describe the incident, but he's talking about he looked at the incident and he found at the legal level that it was difficult for the FBI in this case to actually have a law to deal with this crime. So that's one of the reasons why the crime occurred. And this business about the time delay in terms of operation. So I would have moved this, getting a warranty for the long distance operator takes a long time. That could have been on the operational administrative, but it's not important where you put it. It's just that you put it there on the social side and decide whether it's an operational legal issue. I won't discredit you, etc., at this level of social technical analysis. And then he had the procedures once, okay, multiple accounts with weak passwords, etc. So you see what he's doing, he's looking at an incident and he's using glasses that first he uses an ethical glass, then he uses a legal, then administrative, and then operational, and then he gets down to the technical. And you can see here in the operating system, we're getting into rather technical things about how Unix stores passwords and the bin paths, etc. So this is a good example of someone who I believe is a good technician, and then he's trying to look at, in the case, how some of the legal issues and operational issues work. This slide is talking about the course before. It's giving the series of the lectures and what they mean in terms of theories and practice, in terms of IT systems and information systems. So in many cases, this course is about information system security, not so much about what we call IT security. You can see the YouTube link here. So the purpose of this lecture is to get you to reflect a bit on what you've learned about system security. A term I use a lot, and a lot of my colleagues here at the university get tired of it, but I talk about modeling, then measuring, then managing. In many cases, one of the problems we have in our field is that we do not have measurements on security. So we do we try to prevent security insecurity from happening, and we think that if we install this firewall that's at evaluation level 4, that we can bring about security in organization, but then the enemy uses an application level weakness or a social engineering weakness. So we have a hard time measuring it. And I believe one of the reasons we have a hard time measuring it is because we do not have the correct models. I'm going to get into a bit of science here. This is a master's course, and you should have a scientific approach to this area. So information security science has what I call a paradigm crisis. And I'll explain the paradigm crisis. And what the idea here is in this lecture is we're giving you something called a threshold concept. So some of my students, after they've taken the course, say that they see social technical systems everywhere, and the answer is yes. So some systems are more technical or more social, but when you get down to it and the security problem, almost all systems are social technical. So it's a bit difficult in the exam when I ask you to give examples of a social technical control. And I'm rather liberal, so if you have valid arguments as well as to why this is a social technical control, not just a social or technical control, I will read that and consider that, and we can have the discussion. Right now, I'd like to talk about something called a paradigm crisis. If you want to read about threshold factors in computer science, we have a number of different concepts that you have to understand to get through. And once you understand what a state is in a computer, once you understand what recursion is, you can never really look at a computer again and understand it the same way. And this is what I hope I tried to project in this course to you. We talked a bit in this course about different types of systems. And basically, I'm doing a dichotomy here. On the top of this slide, you see that there's a concept of probabilistic systems. That means there are events that can occur, and you measure the events in terms of a mathematical model. In this case, I'm showing a mathematical model of events with a skewed distribution. That means if you're looking at the blue diagram on the left, there's a likelihood of events occurring more often than on the right. And this is what we use in social science. So human behavior is often seen as a probabilistic problem. I cannot predict with a given degree of accuracy what an individual will do, but I can predict what a group of individuals will do. Natural sciences, they look at more what are called deterministic systems. So given A, given B, we should get result C. In this case, P1, P2, P3 produce a result. So these are the two types of sciences. When it comes to computer sciences, it is often called the science of the artificial. So security science is basically a science of the artificial. In this case, IT security science. That is to say that we are studying a social system and a natural science system and the merger between that. It's an artificial system. It's not a social system only. It's not a natural system. It's an artificial system. We created it. So the scope of this course is more on the social side, but we still have to use some natural science theory. So this is the scope of the course in terms of information systems, computer security, information systems security in practice. Now, when I say there's a paradigm crisis going on, I'm going to use a paradigm is something that a researcher named, actually a philosopher named Kuhn, injected into the history of science in the 1960s and talked about paradigm crisis. A paradigm is a way of looking at the world. And we say looking in a sense, and this is what Kuhn uses in his in his book. Now, some of you are seeing this as a duck, and some of you are seeing this as a rabbit. So in science, sometimes we say, well, we have to go on what's observable about computer crime, etc., but we go on, and a paradigm shift occurs when someone all of a sudden says, no, this is a duck. So the same thing is seen through the same lens. And to give an example, we had a paradigm crisis in the Western society with Copernicus. I don't know if anybody knows who Copernicus was. He's a Pole. And he decided that, guess what? The Earth is not the center of the universe. So for a long time, about 2,000 years, humanity, or the civilized humanity, or the developed humanity, whatever, had a notion that the Earth was the center of the universe. And if you look at this diagram here that's going on, this is called the Ptolemaic, he's an Egyptian astronomer. And he had what is called the geocentric model of the universe. Now, one of the problems they had at the time is they thought the universe was, the celestial bodies were perfect. And what they didn't understand is why you have something called retrograde motion. So what you will see is if you look at Mars in the sky at night, it goes back and forth across the horizon. Not at night, but over the time period. So the Earth is moving, and Mars is not moving perfectly. Now, a lot of the, probably for about 1,000 years, a lot of university, if they were, call them universities, spent their time writing theses about trying to explain why Mars had what is called a retrograde motion. So if you look on the picture on the bottom, you see how Mars, in terms of its orbit, appears in the sky and makes this loop, and that's called retrograde motion. Now, in reality, the real reason for it is that the Earth is not the center of the universe, it's the Sun. And we see this because of the way Mars circles around the Sun. So basically, they had a paradigm crisis, and then Copernicus proved with mathematics and observation that it cannot be true that the Earth is the center of the universe. It's the Sun that's the center, at least, of our solar system. And I believe we have the same thing going on in security. So we have a paradigm crisis. And what the crisis is now, I just realized one of the slides popped out, is that instead of having, I should dig it up again, instead of having technology as the center of the security problem, we should have social science as the center of the security problem. As we said before, guns don't kill people. People do. Computers don't commit computer crime. People do. All right, so why is there a security gap? I said before, I study these computer crimes. I know you saw this diagram before. The things, this artificial world we're creating is doing that. We're using, creating technology that can do more things than we can control. And we're getting something I call the social technical gap. It's not as if we don't have risk. Risk is endemic in our lives. It's just that when we create new technology, we create new types of risk. We can use social control to control them, or we can use technical control. And this theory is brought about by doing inductive research. That's to say that naive inductivism. I looked at computer security crime in Sweden, and I saw when I did a root cause analysis with the skills I had then, that if I use the dichotomy of social reasons for this or technical reasons for this, most of the crimes committed were because they had weak social controls, not because they had weak technical controls. And then making observation too, most of the money invested and the mechanisms and the research done to improve the situation were focusing on security, technical controls. Now, so that means there's a mismatch between IT crime prevention and my observation of the computer crime. So basically, we were having a bit what I would call retrograde motion. So what you have here is this gap. And what you have to understand and what you're going to have to work with as security managers or as police officers going out and looking at crime, you're going to be facing individuals that have to deal with this gap. They have technology, they use it to make money, but they don't have the right management control in the organization, and we don't have enough control in the society to control it. So what we have here now, if you see here, is you have the opposite. Instead of having it's technology that's going around society, not society that's going around technology. So in many cases, a lot of people are approaching the security problem from a technological deterministic perspective. It's the technology that creates the crime. So the picture on the top is showing how no, it's the opposite. It's technology that moves around the social, the weak social controls, not the social controls that should be moving around the technology. And that's what I mean by we have a paradigm crisis in information security research and practices. Bruce Schneier says all the time, if you think that technology will solve the problem, you really don't understand technology and you really don't understand security. And this is a statement, unfortunately you have to read it offline, whatever, saying exactly the same thing. Okay, so basically what I'm saying is that the reason that you should be studying social technical approaches, it's sort of a what is called non-normal science. A lot of the science and the research you'll be studying at university will be research to support the established theories of information security. This course is trying to get you to question those. Unfortunately, it's not necessarily giving you the answers, but it's giving you the right way to ask questions. Now, in order for us to ask questions, we have to use the right terminology and understand relationships. So for the exam, I want you to demonstrate to me that you understand the basic abstract concepts of security. So this is a diagram, as you can see in the exam that I sent out, that I want you to be able to some extent, short answer question, repeat. Now, it can be dicey in terms of marking this, because an owner might, instead of using the, you don't have to memorize it. So if you say, instead of values an asset, if you look at the top one, here we have an owner values an asset. A threat agent wishes to abuse and or may damage this asset. If you call the thing wants to sabotage instead of damage, of course you get credit. I'm not asking you to repeat the words 100%, but I want you to be able to reproduce a diagram similar on your own, not using the textbook, etc. So that's the first level that's important for you to understand. Next, I would like you to be able to compare these diagrams. What is similar and what is different about these diagrams? So here we have a security model. This model was proposed in the Common Criteria document, the document used to define security levels in the products you buy. And on the right, this one was used to analyze computer security crimes. So here you have a potential victim, of course, which is the owner. Now, in terms of words, what's interesting I'm seeing today a lot, and I just had some discussions with some people in industry, is the concept of ownership is getting confusing with, and sometimes we have to talk about the custodian. In many cases, you are the custodian of assets. You are not the owner of the assets. That means that you're responsible for them, but you're not actually the owner. Especially in a country like Norway, where a large portions of the government actually own assets. All right, so how would you compare these models? So sit down and think about how they're different, how they're similar. Well, one of the things that doesn't appear in this, which is not good, on the right side of my so-called SVC model, is I don't have the concept of risk. But what I did use was the concept of criminal opportunity structure. In criminology, we have something called the opportunity structure. And why do people steal cards? Why do young kids steal cards? Because they can, because it's cool. Because the car industry couldn't provide locks that were secure enough. So what's interesting, if we look at it from a criminological perspective, there's something called career paths with criminality. And what we know in the 60s and 70s when I studied criminology is that these career paths are influenced by the opportunity structure there. So what we knew, we could see a correlation between young kids that stole cars and them ending up as violent criminals. So you have something called criminal career structure. So what usually happens when I worked as a police officer is a lot of people don't stay being bank robbers. They go on to other crimes, etc., but they start off with some sort of small crime. So the fact that it was easy to steal cars created a new type of opportunity structure and created a different type of pattern when it came to violent crimes in Canada. Now, this is Canada. I can talk about that with certainty. I can't talk about that in other countries. I didn't really study that. The same thing happened when we changed the opportunity structure with girls. We studied this. Most young females start off by shoplifting makeup. So most of the career structure starts off with that, and they can shoplift makeup. Why? Because the stores change the way they sell makeup. They have these huge counters. If you look at the makeup counters and see how the opportunity structure is there, is it easy or difficult? What's interesting in terms of opportunity structures, which has actually affected the cyber crime field, in Norway, in many cases, if you go to a store, and in Sweden, it's hard to buy a razor blade. The razor blades are behind the counter. Can anybody think what this has to do with it? Why are razor blades behind the counter? And the answer is, since I'm only talking to the air, is that the razor blades can be sold by the drug addicts to the convenience stores, the mom and pop stores. So if you steal a razor blade, the resale potential is a lot. It's not as if the drug users, etc., need so many razor blades, is that they could steal this and then resell it to somebody easily. So when I talk about opportunity structure, it's not only the ability to steal something, it's also the ability to resell it. And that's what's happened with cybercrime today. The dark net and all these different facilities have made it quite easier to sell what you steal. And that changes the business model of the criminals. So the potential offender is taking a risk to some extent, but the risk has to do with the effort over the reward. But that has to do with this diagram. We say that the threat agent threats to increase the risk to the asset. So the threat agent gives rise to threats that increase the risk, in this case, that change the opportunity structure. So you have both the countermeasures and the threats that are changing the opportunity structure. Example, a criminological perspective, when they started making cars hard to steal, you saw an increase in kidnapping of drivers. So people would just go in there, instead of trying to hotwire a car, they just stop a car on the highway and steal it. Use a gun to get the owner out of the. So you change from a simple theft of possessions to threats on lives. And that's what's happened in the criminology of cybercrime. Ransomware has become popular. So the opportunity structure has changed because the asset and the vulnerability of the asset has changed. And this is a never-ending story. So here's a model that the NSA proposes. They talk about availability, integrity, confidentiality, store, process, and transmit. And they have this one. In order to deal with the social technical nature of it, they talk about policy education technologies. Now, what's interesting is the similarities is that we were talking about store, process, and communicate before on the right-hand side, right? That's in the same thing with the SBC model. So there are many different ways to model, and I'm not asking you to believe in one or the other. A model is not wrong or right. It's more or less useful for the problem it's trying to solve. So for example, if you wanted to take a trip to Mars, using the Earth Center model of the universe would get you into trouble. But if you just want to watch Mars on from the horizon, it doesn't mean much of a difference. But if you actually want to get there, if you actually want to solve computer crime, then you're going to have the right model, or you're going to end up just lost in cyberspace. All right, so in the book, you have different models. I gave you one social technical model. I give you models that are not called social technical, but as you can see, they have both technical components. I talked about abstract systems. Of course, confidentiality, integrity, availability, that's very abstract. Store, process, and transmit, that's very concrete. And we talked a bit before in the other lectures about concrete and abstract models. And of course, they try to include some aspects of living systems when they talk about education. Another model that you had, there's an article you're supposed to read called The Social Requirements of Technical Systems. It's in the reading material. Please read that. And it describes the different levels of social technical systems with hardware, software, human-computer interaction, and social technical systems. So many times in computer science, they talk about human aspects of security. That's more on the individual level. What the social technical system model is trying to do, and the methodology is designed for us to look at the problem from a group perspective, an organizational perspective. The actual methodology SBC model, if you're doing it correctly, you should have experts in law looking at that. You should have experts in policy. You should have experts in technology. And they should all have the same abstract model so they can communicate with each other. In my 30 years, many cases, the reason that things go wrong is that the technical expert is not able to communicate in an efficient manner to the legal expert. And what we found is by giving them a common model, they could actually communicate better and more efficiently. So that was the modeling aspect of the course. Then I got down to the practical side of this, and you see how, in a sense, a checklist in the textbook is looking at information security management as a checklist process. And the book, as I said, if you buy it, I think it's worthwhile to have if you're going to end up either doing security consultancy, being a security manager. These checklists are useful. You need to have them. They should be sitting, you should know them. when you've been working in the field, they become rather rudimentary, but it's when you start off, it's a good idea to have these checklists and follow them. The idea in the exam, if you see the exam question, is that I'm going to give you some forms of attack, and then I ask you, what do you think is a good social technical way of dealing with that form of attack? And is no, in the case of the exam, there's no right or wrong answer. It makes it difficult for me to mark, but I can see how you're writing the example. So in the textbook, it gives you examples about how to deal with the different types of attack. And you can look later. Now, what you will see a lot of times in the textbook, too, is they use a lot of different words. I'm not asking you to memorize the words. If you use the wrong word and call it security product life cycle and it's not security life cycle, that's not important. But I want you to be able to use these words and understand them. And this is the first section of the exam. Again, same thing again, what is different, what is similar between the tick-in-the-box things and the security. So as you see on the right, is that they model things rather, they like putting little entity relation diagrams and have arrows there, etc., etc. The SBC model does the same thing and talks about culture, structure, and methods, machines from one abstraction level and makes it more concrete by talking about ethical codes, contracts, and legal systems, administrative systems, operation systems, applications, operating systems, and hardware. Basically, what it's trying to do is present the same problem, but presenting in a different structure. So the exam. 2 hours, 40% short answer questions. I gave you some examples before what the short answer questions were. And one large 60% question. You'll be given an article which is going to be similar to Lab 1 and Lab 2 and then asked to make a social technical analysis. How do you study for this? Read articles, reports about incidents, and when you read them, think about, okay, in this description I can see a social one, in this one I can see a technical. This one, I'm not sure exactly because I don't really understand what social technical is, but I think this is social technical. And why do you think it's social technical? So how do you get a grade in this? It's difficult to grade, but if you just sort of list the things, that's fine. A lot of people, they on the exam, they give me a diagram and they say, this is social technical, and then they describe the way they want. And they usually get a passing grade. To get higher grades, they have to elaborate. To get an A, you have to be innovative. And I give you some examples of innovation. I got permission to show examples of student answers from the exam 2 years ago. I will show you them here. And the short answer questions. The lecture, the material in the lecture was a bit brief, but what is requisite variety? Requisite variety in security has to do with the fact if you want to be the controlling agent and you're controlling system one and you can only produce 9 states and the system you can control can produce 11 states, that means you have a gap of 2 states. You do not have the requisite variety to absolutely secure that system. You are taking a risk. I gave examples in the course about handcuffs, cutting down the variety that a suspect or prisoner can produce in terms of fighting, and how do we have different types of variety here in computer systems. You can think in terms of choosing passwords. What's the variety in a password? How do you increase the requisite variety in the password? You say that you have to use capital letters, or you have to use special letters. That's an example of a social control trying to generate requisite variety in a password. Another one, of course, was one of the problems you see all the time when you're doing systems analysis, regardless whether it's security or any other system, is to figure out what the boundaries of the systems are. I gave you some arbitrary techniques to talk about the individual, the organization, or the team, the national level or the supranational level. And I'm not requiring in this thing to be so formal on that, but how do you define the boundaries? I did give examples. The boundaries between the system and the environment have to do with the amount of control you have. Whether something is part of the environment or part of the system depends on the relationship of the control. And then there's some, I just want to make sure that you had a chance and to read and process the textbook or ask you questions about, this is not, you know, you won't fail probably for not answering this, but what's the difference between certification and accreditation? These are terms that are in Chapter 13. All right. Questions going on? Now, the next thing I'm going to present is a presentation I made to a group of Norwegian, to kick off the Norwegian National Security Month, I guess, 2 years ago. It's called Ghost Story. The idea behind this was that I have a course in information technology rhetoric, and the way the National Security Month in Norway ends on the 31st of October, which incidentally is Halloween. And why is that important? How do we train our children? Norwegians especially, not so much this generation, but the generation before, they always talk about trolls. We get people to understand the problems, etc., by talking about ghosts. So we get people to change behavior by scaring them. So the notion was the one that can tell the best ghost story wins. In this case, this is a ghost story that I want you to take between now and the 16th. It's the year of our Lord, 2014, so this is 2 years ago. It's a sunny June day in Jurvik. Exams on the 16th of June. You're sitting in this case we're sitting in K105, and you started the exam for the course EMT 4152. Social Technical Modeling and Analysis. You have been assigned seat number 13. Actually, this is a true case. It's strange enough. I'll get into this. You have been assigned seat 13. You open up your exam booklet, and you begin to read the two pages of the exam questions before you start. Question one, easy. What is, give me an example of recursive variety in an IT system. Question two, no problem. Question three, what? This is question three, or question five in this case. This had to do with in 2014, we had the Heartbleed. So what happens in the course, I'm going to try and find some incident. I might have to go back, maybe not actually, but this happened between the course, was the Heartbleed virus. A vulnerability. This is the actual question that was used. So what I did is I gave the students, and I brought in the company that discovered the Heartbleed virus, Codacom, and they made a presentation about this in the course. And then I also gave an example about a social technical analysis of another type of strange problem. It's called mad cow disease. It's a two-page article. It's a bit too heavy, whatever. It was done in 1986. But I gave it before the exam because I knew that the students would panic if they had to read a two-page article. And the question, this is a similar question you're going to get. Using the social technical model and tools discussed in the course, culture, structure, methods, and machines, and the control stack of the security by consensus model outlined for root cause analysis. Do a root cause analysis of the Heartbleed vulnerability. That's an example of this one. That was the article they got explaining the Heartbleed. This is the actual exam booklet. That's my marking sheet. And you see something strange? 13 didn't hand in anything. I didn't make this up either. It's funny, it's just coincidence, but... So this is a presentation now about the Heartbleed. You can look at it later. I talk about how in 1992, etc., I was analyzing this problem. And I talk about the Heart of Darkness. And this is actually from chapter one of the thesis. Today in 1989, that was 1989 when I wrote this, I put open source code systems. And I said, now it's hard to say, okay, so in the book called The Heart of Darkness, we have this situation in Belgium where they were trying to take as much ivory as they could out of West Africa. If anybody's seen the movie or read the book, it's about sending people off to do things without having the right ethical structure. And as I wrote way back in 1989, is that thus to this chagrin, that's the bottom line, the last sentence, of many computer security administrators, which I was, computer systems are being maintained by the implicit control structures of individuals using them. Manning, Snowden, etc. If you look at the open source community, we have the same situation. About 80% of most, I think 67% or some strange number, but anyways over 50, of all the systems that you're using are dependent on open source code. Because they are pushing for freedom, right? Now, this is nothing new for us. This is from... 19. This is when I worked at Telia Research, was in the telephone company, in 1997. These bugs that were there in 1997 are still there. Why are they still there? So I gave an idea. So this is the social technical stack that you've been shown. We talk about the stack on the left and the stack on the right. You have ethics, laws, policies, procedures, and technique. This is an example of how you use this model to compare different systems. In this case, in the article here, I'm comparing a health system security stack in Britain with a health system security stack in Sweden. The stacks cannot communicate because they have different social technical structures. So even though that it may be on the technical level they're secure, because they have different control structures at the top, and what's interesting, when I did this actual analysis, one of the reasons why the Swedish system could not, the laws didn't permit this, is that in Sweden, communication in the hospital LAN had to be encrypted because they didn't want to have clip-on attack. In the British hospitals at the time, the ones that I saw, they had these guards walking around the time. I don't know if you've ever been to Heathrow. There's a guard every second thing, and it had to do with the labor cost. So this is, you've seen this before, this is the social technical system. In this diagram here, you don't have to answer the question this way, but what is the independent and what is the dependent variable from as a scientist? The dependent variable for us in security is the level of security. The independent variable is the social technical balance. And how do we measure that? I gave examples here about how we have this way of looking at technology adoption curves. And I talked a bit about this in the lectures, how if you have a situation where you have a nation like Norway that really likes technology, we're the most digitized nation in the world, this often creates a good security situation. So if you introduce something, it's going to be used securely because people are prepared to adapt to the new technology. If you introduce this into a culture that is not prepared to adopt these ones, there's a good chance that this technology is not going to be secure. So that's what social technical modeling is. I'm just giving a brief run through of it. And you see you have to put this social technical into context. So we have culture, structure, methods, and machines, and how do we operationalize that? When we're looking at a system, we see what the relationship in that system is between the ethical structure, the legal structure, the policy structure, and the technical structure, and breaking that down into application security, operation system security, and hardware security. You have an article in the reading that talks about how you do this to look at software supply chain. So in this case, we have four different companies participating in supply chain. Naturally, in any sort of chain, you could have that the systems have the same technical levels of security, but since they don't have the same administrative levels of security, the software is not going to be secure. This is an example about threat modeling here. In this case, I'm giving an example. This is from the article that's in the reading material on social technical threat modeling in software supply chain. You can see in the first one here, they don't use digital signatures to tamper-proof the delivery. Makes no difference anyways because they don't have the integrity checks when they take it. So they just take the software and they have no way of checking it anyways. And you can see that if you have these different ones and you're looking at your supply chain, that if there is a weak link in any part of the supply chain. And I gave an example here about your exercise. You see it here. You have the same thing. So back here. In this case, this is a Norwegian article, how the bank payment system in Norway was insecure for a while because the users were not updating the JavaScript. Then you see this model before. So this is the exam question. So here's some examples. So how do you deal with this? Started with a good simple model of the stakeholders. So we had the different stakeholders. He says the developer of the code in open source, the reviewer, the users. And he shows that the policies and the procedures were insecure. Another student was creative and had this model showing how these things are related, that the insecurity had to do with these different levels. You can see here this talking about OpenSSL at one level. So these are actual student answers, students that got C's or B's. What was interesting here in terms of the actual thing, if you look at it, if you look at what happened with this, is that in the open source community, in the article, it describes how the person who developed the code is the same person who tested the code. And anybody who's worked in the development, you do not have the same person writing and testing. It's a procedural thing. Not only that, it should have been a warning since that the code was submitted a half year between the New Year's. We have this thing in the car industry in North America. You say we have the Monday cars or the Friday cars. You don't want a car built on Monday or a car built on Friday, because they're not built well. So that's an example of an exam question. You have to do a social technical analysis in 70 minutes of the heart bleed. And I'm going to try and find some sort of incident, and it's quite easy nowadays to finding incidents. I want to make sure there's enough information, but you can be creative. Obviously, the article and the time you have to read is not going to be there. I'm not interested in accuracy as much as I'm interested in showing that you understand how to do a social technical analysis. All right. This is annoying sliding. I'll hop over it, I think, but we see. No, I'll keep it. There's no sound here, so that's good. So basically, the notion is that we're creating a new environment. You as students are going to have to get used to working with social technical modeling. And you're going to have to make this cyberspace secure. That's a PR thing saying from the one who originated the Center for Cyber and Information Security, saying that the world is made up of people who are well-educated or poorly educated social technical system designers. I'm hoping that you are well-educated. In this case, this is the research institute I'm a part of, CCIS, and our job is to build bridges between industry and students. Now, I know this is an exam and this is a ghost story, but number 13 didn't make it across the bridge. And I think I've given you enough material that if you have read all the stuff, have followed the lectures, you should make it across this bridge. So please, I'm trying to change the culture, security culture in the security community. Unfortunately, you will be entering a structure that has the old culture, who believe that you have to look at it from a very, you have to go deep in order to understand the problem. And no one's saying that the deepness is not good, but often going too deep on a problem, you lose the breath. And so if you're going to go deep on the computer crime problem, on the security problem, you're going to have a broad enough perspective. And believe it or not, to have a broad perspective, you have to have a simple model. And this is the model I'd like you to carry with you to understand that culture, structure, methods, and machines. And if there's a security problem in this, it's because often the relationships and the understanding between this dynamic is not well understood. So go out and be social technical out there. Thank you. Now, there's some students here. Any questions before I go on? Was it clear as mud, or any questions you'd like to ask about the exam first? No. And it might be between now and the 16th. There might be an incident comes up that's particularly interesting. Hopefully not, but it'd be. And that's the point. When you're looking, the idea here is the reason I'm doing this. When you're reading anything about incidents, because the question was, will the exam cover the heartbleed? And the answer is no. I won't repeat that. It just happened when we were having the course, so it seemed like the appropriate thing to bring up in the exam, because basically the problem was the social technical structure of the open source community and how they did testing. So basically the problem was the method used to do software security testing in that community. And that. And that was one of the ideas I had when in the assignments for the students in the course, they were supposed to go out and look at incidents and find an incident and do a social technical analysis of that incident. So that was preparing you for the exam question. And it's only, again, the exam question, as I said here, I'm going to hop a bit, sorry for you online, but yeah. Remember, it's 70, yeah, get out here. Sorry. The exam question is seven, the exam is an hour and a half. The question's worth 60%. So if we do the maths, how much time should you spend on the question? 70 minutes about. But you can, I mean, it doesn't, and what I find too, it's hard to say, but sometimes a diagram helps. And sometimes it just takes too much time to do. I'm not after artists. You're not here to be an artist, but and if an incident occurs that is of particular social technical in nature, it's a good chance I use it. But I have to have the exam in about a week before. So if it's something the day before, you won't have to. Don't consider this as being likely. What's interesting, I have a lot of incidents that you've written about in your proposals, because the way the course was set up is the students were supposed to propose an incident, and then if I'd be nice, I could use that incident, but I'm hoping that something else comes up right now. Now remember, the first thing to do is to look at it, decide on what is the system in focus, say, in this report, I will analyze the incident from the perspective of the Bank of Colombia, or in this case, the law office in Panama. I will look at the system above and the system below. So if we take the Panama case, the system below would be the ones, the clients of the bank. The system above, if you want, it could be the laws of Panama when it comes to financial transactions, as an example. And as I say, just take it easy. I mean, most of you who have done the exercises know how this is structured. I give the example here from so here, do we have anything that I could, that is relevant to understand the ethics and cultures to understand the incident, both at the organizational level or the individual level, etc.? Are there any legal ones that discussed in the article? And it can be that there might not be something, you can assume something. You can't assume too much, but I understand that it can get frustrating in some of these things. Administrative, operational, etc. And in a sense, this one is just listing them. And if time doesn't permit to write too much, you can just list things. All right, so I answered the question, will the heartbeat be used on this exam question? The answer is no. Will there be another one? Yes. And I'm sorry to say, I'm sure there's going to be another type of incident. I have a lot to choose from. Once I did the course, I had people vote on the incident. Because it is a bit of a stretch. As I said to some of the students here, is that this type of analysis requires a team. It's very difficult for an individual to do this alone, and you will see this yourself, because you cannot be an expert in all areas. And the reason I like this approach is that when I worked in industry, etc., I would bring a team together. And I would see the reasons that the lawyers couldn't talk to the technicians is they didn't have the same naive mental model of the problem. And I found that by introducing a simple naive model, it helped them at least agree to disagree many times. In most cases, they just leave the room confused. All right, any other issues? As I say, I'm quite open to discussions and feedback. Send me an email between now and the 16th. If you give me enough notice, we can have a Skype, or we can have a phone conversation, or just I can answer your email. All right, that's it for me. Good luck. see you all, read about you on the 16th.